final LC set of amendments on 2324. So we're going to take that bill last as far as our, or third, if you will, on our full committee agenda, hoping that those amendments are going to arrive in just a few minutes. For that reason, we'll proceed first with 2863. This measure relates to indigent defense. It was reported out about a week ago. However, when we reported it out, we failed to take official committee action regarding deletion of the prior referral to Ways and Means Committee, and council has some information for us on that.
We asked the fiscal office to take a look at the bill as amended, and I was told this morning, and I was told I could tell you, committee also, that after reviewing the bill as amended, it's their opinion it has no fiscal impact. If anything, it has a positive fiscal impact. Suggest, Mr. Chairman, that we remove the referral to Ways and Means.
Mr. Chairman, let's say Burton, I would move that take, if I don't know if this motion is right, refer House Bill 2869 to the House with a recommendation to rescind the referral to Ways and Means.
Okay. Representative Burton has moved House Bill 2869 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and further recommend that the prior re-referral to Ways and Means Committee be rescinded. Is there further discussion on the motion? Okay, if not, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
No.
Aye.
Aye.
No.
Aye.
Aye.
Representative Bauman, this is on the indigent defense bill, 2869, to the floor as amended without a re-referral to the Ways and Means Committee.
Aye.
Bauman votes aye.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Votes no. Motion's adopted. Representative Burton, were you going to be the carrier on this one?
I will be the carrier.
Thank you. Okay, Senate Bill 838.
I told you so, sir, but I won't say that.
I believe this measure had passed out other committee. However, there was a notice of possible reconsideration, possibly to consider additional amendments.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bellamy.
I would move we reconsider House Bill 838.
Okay, Representative Bellamy moves that the committee reconsider the vote by which it passed Senate Bill 838 to the floor.
Mr. Chair, I withdraw my motion.
Representative Bellamy withdraws his motion.
Got the right clue here.
Okay. Did you say you have a clue?
No.
Someone say you're in search of a clue.
Okay, if there's no further action, 838 is on its way to the floor.
Good.
Absolutely.
Okay. We are still awaiting the amendments on 2324. Representative Hanlon, do you want to begin a general discussion of the subcommittee's work in that area, or would you prefer to wait for the amendments from LC? We can stand at ease or take a recess until those arrive.
Well, I suggest we stand at ease until we actually have the words in front of us.
Well, why don't we just take a short recess, if that would be okay with you? Okay. Full committee will be in recess for a few minutes, hopefully until we receive the amendments on 2324. Please, if you're going to leave the immediate area, let staff know so we'll know how to retrieve you and can proceed. We've got a very busy subcommittee agenda as well this afternoon. House Judiciary Committee will come back to order, please. I just had a short announcement. We've got our counsel, Mr. Taylor, down at LC's office trying to find out, track, identify, get copies of the amendments that we're expecting on 2324. We are hopeful that's going to be accomplished in a little bit, but there's no guarantee. I presume it's going to be sometime this afternoon, hopefully early afternoon. So because we just have huge amount of work to do in Subcommittee 1 on 323. I'm going to recess the full committee, but ask full committee members to sort of let us know where we can reach you as soon as we get the amendment so we can come back to 3-2-3-2-4. But we'll recess the full committee, and Subcommittee 1 will reconvene immediately after we change the taste. And full committee members who are not on someone, you're welcome to stay if you like, but if you want to return to your offices, just let us know where we're at and where you're going to be at. So the full committee will be recessed. Subcommittee 1, let me know when we get the taste ready. We have before us the proposed amendments, Dash 18.
To the commission.
We were working in the 70s. I guess this is an improvement.
Yes.
2324-18.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hanlon.
Before we start, if you would, committee members, this Dash 18 embodies the entire bill as the subcommittee has amended it. What we were waiting for was to be able to put it all into one packet rather than have us deal with trying to hand engross the different amendments in the subcommittee. If you would each, please. Counsel, did you make the corrections on the errors in this packet, or shall I just read them off?
We made some corrections in here. There was some material.
Let me do it. Okay. If you will look at page 15 of the Dash 18 amendments. 15, page 15, 1-5. All right. Line 1, beginning at however, delete that sentence, which ends on line 3. This is an error. There are only two minor errors in this entire 50-page package, and I wish you'd follow me along.
Okay.
And on page 25 of the amendments, line 6, delete beginning with the word however and ending on line 9 with the word subsection. Okay, those are the two corrections. Am I correct, counsel?
That's correct.
House Bill 2324 is the civil commitment statute which came as recommended to the full committee by the subcommittee, which originated in the recommendations on civil commitment of mentally ill persons, the task force on civil commitment took place in the interim. Representative Kopetsky was a member, as were many of the witnesses that took part in our subcommittee hearings, including Dr. Bray. The bill, the net effect of this bill, and was Kingsley Click, I was a member of that task force out of the Office of State Administrator. The bill, based on our governor's promise of substantially more funding in the area, subject matter area that we are addressing, is thick, as you can see. What it does is it puts more resources of this state into the area of treating and dealing with those who are mentally ill persons. Major things that it additionally does, and council did an excellent job of boiling this down to a two-page staff measure analysis. What it additionally does is it expands the civil commitment criteria. And if you look at page 1 of the staff measure analysis, it describes the expanded criteria. I must say that criteria is not without controversy, as there is a court decision in the Ninth Circuit that makes that subject to probable legal challenge once implemented in the state of Oregon. Also, the governor's office did look at the analysis from the attorney general's office and first indicated to our subcommittee that we should delete the expanded criteria, and then came back probably 2 weeks later and indicated, and I'm speaking on behalf of my recollection of the governor's position via his representatives, that we should go back to the expanded criteria, knowing well that there will be a challenge in the courts to that, and the decision we're speaking of being within the Ninth Circuit, that the challenge would end up at no lower level than the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco, and probably at the next higher level, which is the United States Supreme Court. There are other issues within this bill. One of them, I believe the committee has been lobbied on, relating to the finances and who does what. We tried to restore fiscally the responsibilities where they are. We did add a responsibility that for any person within the civil commitment process, that either the Attorney General's office or the District Attorney's office be required to appear. At present, in many of those proceedings, and it differs from place to place in the state, there will be no person prosecuting the case, and the judge ends up fulfilling that function in place of a prosecutor. There is no advocates on both sides, and the judge is in an uncomfortable position of trying to make sure all of the prosecutor's questions get asked in making the final decision. I think we made the policy decision to require that there be a prosecutorial type at all of these hearings, and that's exactly what it was a policy decision made by us, knowing full well this bill is going to has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means Committee. In addition to that, we go back to the task force report from the interim. I see Representative Kopetsky sitting out there. Many of the issues not only were controversial within our subcommittee, but were also controversial within the interim task force, which seemed to sprout brothers and sisters along the way. And some of the votes on these issues were 6-5. So it seems the bill has very little in it that isn't somewhat controversial. But all in all, as a policy, we have recommended it in the form of -18, paid 58 pages long, for your consideration.
Okay, Alan, do you have a motion for us?
Mr. Chair, I would move the -18 amendments and then propose to move the bill to Ways and Means with a due pass.
Okay, Representative Hanlon has moved the -18 amendments.
May I speak to that procedurally?
Yes, Representative Hanlon.
That merely affects the technicalities that the subcommittee had already accomplished in the amendments, but they're all in one packet here rather than spread out.
Okay, so basically this ratifies the amendments previously adopted by the subcommittee with the two corrections that you've noted on pages previously identified.
That is correct.
Is there any objection to those amendments? If not, -18 amendments are adopted. Representative Hanlon.
Mr. Chair, I'd move 2324 as amended with a due pass, the effect of which would be to refer the bill directly to Ways and Means, I believe.
Okay. It has had a prior reference to Ways and Means, a referral by prior reference. Representative Hanlon moves House Bill 2324 as amended to the floor, due pass, with the prior referral to Ways and Means, also as part of the committee report. Representative Burton.
I've had several people in the group that Representative Hanlon mentioned lobbying me, but I had a note call from my district attorney. And I realize this has to go to Ways and Means, and that in fact that may be the most contentious part of this issue, is the funding question. But the district attorney seemed to feel that this would bring, or at least several of them seemed to feel that this would bring an increased caseload to them, which would be burdensome, and for which they may not be prepared. And I gather that they would like to have had some or would like to amend this to see that they're opted out of it. And I just wonder if you can, if you've got a, I imagine that your subcommittee heard that question, and what is your response to that?
Representative Burton, the subcommittee heard the question, was aware of the controversy, and indeed, I think policy-wise, not only looked at the question as I described in my presentation about whether both sides get represented at a hearing rather than having the circuit judge act partially as a prosecutor in what our system traditionally being an adversarial system, but that the policy choice would be to require the AG where it's his duty and the DA's where it's their duty to appear at all the hearings. We heard that. We felt some sympathy considering the fiscal times in this state and county-wide, knowing that 85% of the DA's budget is property tax-based and 15% state-based. Did, in response to that, Representative Burton, remove the penalty provisions that would take away cigarette and gas, or cigarette and alcohol revenues, or penalize the district attorney's funding as a result of not appearing. Nonetheless, we felt as a policy issue, and I think some of us, and I'm speaking for myself, even felt that with the criteria, expanded criteria, being so legally frail, that if we were not to have a traditional adversarial system with both sides represented and let the judge be partially the prosecutor, that's my experience in actually appearing and defending people in these cases, that we would not be making good policy within the bill, and there are interdependencies within the bill. Ultimately, Representative Burton, we understand that this matter will go down to ways and means, and that money is the issue that may have the practical effect of implementing whether or not these people appear.
Well, just a further question, I guess, and that is the requirement for the district attorney to actually appear in this case. You're saying, and I guess maybe I'm not fully aware that the prosecutor needs to actually be present in that kind of environment. I'm wondering what you're saying is a policy matter. The circuit court judge is still hearing from, you're saying, two sides, but is not if the DA isn't there. What is there? Is there really a double-sided issue here?
Maybe I misunderstood your question. I don't think the
need to go through those cases and take on that case. I mean, you're saying that the cost there is not just the appearance, but it's also the caseload factor beyond appearance. What does the DA do when they're there?
The DA will take the case and be the proponent of commitment as the legal representative for the state's interest in commitment. On the other hand, or be the proponent of justice to be done in this case, a traditional prosecutorial function. And most of the times that will be commitment. The person to be committed will also have the right, if indigent, to have their own lawyer represent them, since the issue is freedom or being incarcerated. Whether for treatment or not, it's still the same issue. And at present, there is no requirement that there be somebody fulfilling or representing the state's interest. And what happens as a practical matter where they don't is the judge makes sure the prosecution function is fulfilled. And that is very uncomfortable.
If I could, then I just want to follow up on that. Your sense is that if for all the people who have been committed up to this date, and since that requirement doesn't exist, justice has not been done.
At the present time, I'm not aware of that issue having been raised in the appellate courts and decided one way or another.
Representative Burton, I think Representative Hamlin hit on it's the frail nature of the criteria, and we spent months on that particular question of expanding the criteria. It was not answered to my satisfaction from members of the DA's association how much it's costing our communities and their offices right now when people who have an illness perpetrate a crime on a community and they go through the judicial system rather than face civil commitment. That question was never answered to my satisfaction. And in fact, it was discounted when I asked the questions. There is an expense right now for people who may be mentally ill, who end up perpetrating crimes in the community or against their family and have to be prosecuted. There may be a blip on the chart, but eventually, I think this will have a flattening effect on the cost to those offices because of the commitment criteria, and that's, I think, why the bill was designed. So,
Chair.
Representative Bellamy.
I think what the subcommittee has here is what we truly believe is the best way if there's money available. I personally believe that the DA's office probably is the best solution for the families when there is a commitment, because that's where the families go to. And there is, in society, there is a trust in the DA's office. And I think the subcommittee is bringing to the full committee what we would like to see happen. And I think in Ways and Means, where the money decision has to be made, is that the Ways and Means Committee should try to find the money. If they cannot find the money, I have told the DA's Association that I think the Ways and Means Committee ought to take out the parts of the bill that have a financial structure to them, because they understand the total structure of finances with the DA's office. And it ought to be the Ways and Means Committee that says we can't afford what's best. This is what we can afford, and they can then change that part of the bill if they cannot find any money.
Mr. Chairman,
my position is that I want to send the bill down the way the subcommittee thinks it should go. Knowing full well there may not be money, and they may take out part of that section when they send it to the full floor. And we do have an individual here who's worked on it and is on Ways and Means, and he's assured me he's going to find all the money that we need for this bill.
Representative Bond.
I have a question.
I wasn't smiling either.
At full committee, are you amenable to taking a motion to delete the district attorney defense?
Well, I guess I'd defer to the subcommittee chair.
Mr. Chair, I'm procedurally, if you give me the power, I would not accept that motion. And you asked the question. This was not pre-planned. I'm just telling you what I think. I know Representative Kopetsky may want to speak to this. I hear him.
Before I accept the motion, let's hear from Representative Kopetsky.
Well, Mr. Chairman, to save time, I withdraw the motion, and I'll just say one of the reasons I'm going to vote no on the bill. I think we do sometimes some ludicrous things around here. We vote on a policies where we say we want district attorneys to do something. We send the bill down to Ways and Means without any assurance that they'll fund it, any assurance that they'll take the provision out if they don't fund it, and we simply abdicate our policy responsibilities in a way that I think is irresponsible. If we had some assurance from Ways and Means or a pattern in their history that they would fund, which we don't have, frankly, in these areas, then I'd feel some comfort. But frankly, what we're doing is sending a bill out of this committee that says district attorneys do more work with less money when we're already having trouble finding ways for them to effectively prosecute crime. And I'm in no way unsympathetic to the problem, but I think it's a farce.
Representative Kopetsky, can you give us any... while you're coming up, Representative Dix had an additional comment.
Well, I don't think it's a farce. I wouldn't go that far or even come close to that. We've spent about 5 months in hearings and work session on this measure trying to find an answer to this bill. Indeed, many in the audience I have met with on weekends in my hometown trying to find an answer and a solution to both the criteria question and also the complaints that were put forth before the subcommittee from the DAs and others.
The testimony we heard in one particular case, it was $160,000 cost to the state for an individual to go through the criminal justice system because the criteria was not in place after they had perpetrated the crime. I asked questions time and time again when what I considered to be griping by one particular segment inside this bill about how much they would save eventually by having the criteria in place and in this bill. Those questions were never answered. Instead, the complaining about what it might cost them if they had to come to a particular hearing. So to call it a farce after months of work, and even that particular section, I just cannot agree with my friend from McMinnville. I do agree that we have a problem in telling local government and local entities that they have to do something. But once again, the question was never answered about how much it's costing their offices right now to prosecute cases of people who are mentally ill, and it's a tremendous problem. Hours have been spent on television in the Portland area. A recent show, Asylum in the Streets, addressed the problem. And I don't think that just by complaining that you're going to have to show up in a prosecution role is only one half of the story. You're not looking at the potential savings in the other half.
Chairman, I just want to say for the record, I didn't call the bill a farce. I called the process a farce. That's an extremely important distinction.
Representative Kopetsky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I was hoping I wouldn't be testifying. I do want Representative Bunn's vote, and I think there's some information that he doesn't have, and hopefully he would might be able to change his mind before he votes on this critical bill. Multnomah County used to have assistant district attorneys assigned to these cases, and as budget crunches came in the late 70s, early 80s, they discontinued that practice. There are some counties today where the DA does appear or where county council is appointed. The bill says that it's up to the county to determine whether it shall be the DA or whether they will designate a county council to handle these cases. We do have, in fact, full Ways and Means Committee did vote out the Mental Health Department Division's budget this morning, and it does have in it approximately $7 million additional dollars that the new governor added to the budget for the chronic mentally ill in the state. Earlier this session, in terms of my meeting with the district attorneys, I had agreed that if this committee adopted the change which you have adopted in terms of by adopting these amendments a few moments ago, that they would back off and support the bill, support the requirement. Second, part of my commitment, I agreed that I would do what I could to help them financially in the Ways and Means Committee. I went immediately after that morning's meeting.
Excuse me, who did you have this meeting with?
District Attorney Dale Penn. And I then went up to Representative Hooley, who was then on Ways and Means, chair of the General Government Subcommittee of Ways and Means, encouraged her when she dealt with the DA's budget that she be as generous as possible because of this bill and the potential for added requirement on the district attorneys in this state. She was generous to them in the budget process. I am on Ways and Means. This is an important issue. Earlier this week, I thought, an agreement from the district attorneys that they would support the provisions with the bill, again, with the understanding when this bill got to Ways and Means that I would do everything in my power to get an additional sums of money up to probably around $200,000 for the district attorneys, and meanwhile they are to develop a some sort of formula, because there will be some counties that have a higher impact than others. Umatilla County, because of Eastern Oregon, no health facility there. Clackamas County, because of Damish. Marion County, because of OSH. And then I would do everything in my power. Now, I view what is going on today on the part of the District Attorney Association as nothing less than they're breaking their commitment that they have made. And I don't know what their problem is, but quite frankly, I see this as a statement that they really don't give a good goddamn about the chronic mentally ill in this state, that all they care about is their budget. And I'm sick and tired of hearing that from them.
Okay, if committee member so requests, we may call upon others to comment briefly or to respond, but I don't want to rehear the issue.
Can we ask Mr. Penn to respond to that?
If you so desire, Mr. Penn, you've been requested by Representative Burton to comment and or respond.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, Representative Burton. I appreciate the opportunity.
Please identify yourself.
My name is Dale Penn, Marion County District Attorney, representing the Oregon District Attorneys Association. It was unfortunate that we've gotten to this point in the last couple of minutes. I'm not against this bill. I participated both as a prosecutor and as a defense attorney in mental commitment hearings. The process is not a good process, the way it presently is designed. However, this bill, for a number of months, we have requested that the rather terrible fiscal impacts on our offices would be dealt with.